My name is Lindsay. My guest is the wonderful Dr. Eric Dorninger, naturopath from Boulder, Colorado. Tonight we are talking thyroids. Welcome back, Dr. D.
Thanks, Lindsay.
Talking thyroids. Thyroids. First of all, what is a thyroid and where is it and why are we even talking about this?
Thyroid gland is the size and shape of a butterfly, is how I explain it to people, and it wraps around your Adam's apple, just underneath your Adam's apple. We've talked in past shows about the importance of energy production. How do we make this thing the Chinese called qi, the old school nature cure doctors called vital force, the Ayurvedic doctors called prana, and our Western biochemists called ATP or adenosine triphosphate, the currency, the wampum that runs all operations in our body. And we've talked in the past how the cell has two essential ingredients to do that, steadfast oxygen. And we've talked how sleep apnea can corrupt that, and you can wake a train wreck when you're going hypoxic from apnea. We've talked about anemia. We've talked about emphysema and chronic bronchitis, biotoxin illness, crushing your VEGF ability to bring oxygen into the cell. So oxygen's imperative. And the second one is fuel. And we've changed our verbiage from glucose to fuel because people are catching on with the ketogenic diet and realizing you can run your brain and your body on glucose from carbohydrates or on ketones from fats.
Right.
So the cell, and especially the powerhouse of the cell, the mitochondria, takes these two substrates, glucose and oxygen, and it pumps out ATP. If you are doing anaerobic exercise where you max out your ability to make energy, you go just to using glucose, and that's where you get the buildup of lactic acid. And that's a good thing. It triggers the creation of growth hormone and testosterone release, and that's all great. But who sets the pace of the cell? Who cracks the whip? Who has the gas pedal on how quickly that powerhouse, that mitochondria, does all this? And that's your thyroid hormone, specifically your T3 thyroid hormone, which would be a T3 free on lab. That is ultimately produced by this wonderful endocrine gland called the thyroid. And we're talking about it because issues with it, problems with it, disease process with it is rampant in our country and globally, but really a big Western disease again.
Are you seeing more and more people presenting with thyroid issues?
Yeah, well, you know, I always give a shout out to Dr. Blanchette for getting me up to speed on evaluating heart disease. And as you, I live a charmed life in regards to the people and the giants whose shoulders I get to stand on. And I was taught by Dirk Powell, one of the last students of Dr. Bastier, who Bastier University is named after.
Which is where you graduated
which
from.
Which is where I did naturopathic medical doctor, and or doctor of naturopathic medicine. That is where we learned from Dirk Powell on endocrinology. And for me, I tell people all the time, if I wasn't a naturopath and I was in conventional medicine, I would probably do an ER doc because that makes a lot of sense to me. Your job is to make sure the person doesn't die today.
Right.
I definitely would consider endocrinology because it's so potent when you take a patient who has an endocrine gland that's broken, whether it's testes, ovaries, adrenals, thyroid, and can correct that. So I just fell in love with that class. And to this day, I go back to my Dirk Powell endocrinology notebook that he formulated. He wrote the textbook for our class from all his years of experience. And I said, that's right. He taught us that already.
Yeah.
And Hashimoto's was there in 1999 in his notebook. And what's different about what we were doing in clinic at Bastier then and what we do at Roots and Branches now is I run Hashimoto's antibodies on virtually every case that comes through my office. And that's because, you know, we do a mystery illness clinic. These are people who aren't getting answers with the primary care or the specialist or other holistic providers. And we promise we're going to give it all of our oomph and effort to do a thorough, relentless diagnostic evaluation. So more of these people are going to trickle. More of these thyroid cases are going to trickle into my practice. And we're going to get more into it. But just to give you some stats, some of the research suggests 7% of all Americans show Hashimoto's antibodies. So that's getting close to 24 million Americans. So this stuff is in your clinic, but if you're not looking and evaluating for it, you're going to miss it. And then I think a lot of people know I teach for some of the lecture series that Dr. Datis Karazian has written, and he came out with his groundbreaking thyroid book titled "Why Do I Still Have Thyroid Symptoms When My Lab Tests Are Normal?" And we're going to talk about different problems you can have with the thyroid, and that, like everything in the body, there's a complexity, and if you don't order a battery of thyroid tests, you won't get a clear picture of what that organ is doing in isolation and what it's doing in the complex web of your body.
Dr. D, you mentioned Hashimoto.
Yes.
And we hear of Hashimoto's disease.
Yes.
We also hear Hashimoto's thyroiditis.
Yes.
What's the Hashimoto? Is that the guy who discovered the disease of the gland?
Yes. That is a very prolific doctor who's done lots of research. And we'll jump quickly in the Hashis and then maybe take a quick step back on how this thyroid should work.
Okay.
But 90% of all the hypothyroid you will see in clinic is due to an autoimmune attack on the thyroid. So that's why it's such a big deal, because if you have a low thyroid, 9 out of 10 times it's going to be due to autoimmune attack on that thyroid, destroying that gland's ability to operate. But in an ideal world, we talk about these feedback loops in the endocrine system. And think of a radiator and a thermostat.
Okay.
And our job is to keep the room in homeostasis, 72 degrees. So at 60 degrees, what should happen is that should be registered by the thermostat. The thermostat should turn on, and the thermostat is your hypothalamus and pituitary gland,
okay,
what we call the motherboard of the brain. The major regulator of entire body system is hypothalamus pituitary gland. So that thermostat picks up, or the hypothalamus pituitary gland picks up that 60 degrees, and it says, I'm going to send a signal to the radiator to start pumping out heat. And the radiator is the thyroid. So the hypothalamus and the pituitary gland does that through thyroid releasing hormone from hypothalamus to pituitary, and then TSH, which you'll see at a primary care evaluation,
right,
thyroid stimulating hormone, or TSH, which has a docking station, a receptor on the thyroid, and it acts as a little boot in the behind and says, hey, it's cold in here.
Right.
Turn on the production of T4 and T3 thyroid hormone. That would be the radiator pumping out the heat. The heat is going to feed back to the thermostat and say, we're at 72 degrees. You can chill out on the signaling. Or the T4, T3 thyroid hormones are going to signal back to hypothalamus pituitary region and say, we got the message. We're speeding everything up. So when that thyroid pumps out thyroid hormone, approximately 80% comes out as T4.
Mm-hmm.
And thyroid hormone is made of tyrosine and iodine, and if it has four iodine molecules on it, it's going to be T4, and that is the storage form or the inactive form of thyroid hormone. And again, every hormone has little activities in the body, but for the most part, T4 is inactive. And then 20% comes out as T3, or a tyrosine iodine molecule with only three iodines on there. And that is the thyroid hormone that is active and tells the cells to move. And you know I'm a man of God and science, so I think about evolution and why did God do it that way, and I just let those thoughts bounce around in my head. And the reason is, if it all came out as T3, there's thyroid receptors in the heart, so you'd go brrr, boom, and just blow up your heart from too much thyroid hormone stimulation.
Right.
So the heart is under the stimulation of autonomic nervous system, sympathetic, parasympathetic, but also from T3. And that's why if someone has a toxic thyroid nodule, a nodule that's just spitting out T3, they can go into a cardiomyopathy and heart attack. So, we have this come out as 80% T4, 20% as T3, so that we can run the system, and then in an ideal world, in the periphery, in the liver, in the adrenals, in the kidney, in the brain, but mostly in the liver and gut, turn some of that T4 into T3 with our deiodinase, or I remove an iodine enzyme, to make more T3. So what happens if you don't have enough T3 in the system? I tell patients every day with Hashimoto's, the end game is T3. So your hypothalamus tells your pituitary, which tells your thyroid, to spit out T4, T3, and then you should deiodinate some of this to keep the T3 going. And it's that T3 unbound, meaning not attached to the thyroid binding globulin, which is a taxi cab that carries the thyroid through the system, that can get messed up from oral birth control pills, by the way. So sometimes you have enough total T3 in the system, but it's bound to thyroid binding globulin because the taxi cab has been overproduced from taking oral birth control. But
the
whole thing, and it's not, you know, you can say a lot about what birth control did for women's movement and ability to not get pregnant when they didn't want to and hit the workforce. But at the end of the day, it's also a physiological mess sometimes in regards to corrupting things like unbound free T3. And then free T3 hits the cell receptor and sets the pace. And it sets the pace of everything. And my brain likes to reverse engineer things. So it's very easy to think of what are the symptoms of hypothyroid going to be if T3 sets the pace of everything. T3 in free form is in the bloodstream and goes boom and hits the guts. Well, if it's not doing that, I'm going to be constipated.
There you go.
Boom, it hits the liver. If I'm not doing that, I'm not going to process cholesterol as well. I'm not going to do phase 2 detoxification of the liver. I'm going to start having higher cholesterol levels. What's it going to do to the brain? It's going to slow my brain down. I'm not going to be able to remember that telephone number as quick. I'm going to forget that person's name. I'm going to slow. T3 deficiency or thyroid hormone deficiency is such a big deal in infants because it is a cause of mental retardation. If you have severe enough hypothyroid in a newborn, you can get mental retardation. That's how important T3 function is to the brain. So you'll have predominantly women, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, come in and say, I can't find my brain. You know, and if they're 40, 44, good luck not being labeled perimenopause, right? And we'll say, hey, you have perimenopausal symptoms, but you're not perimenopausal. We have the labs to prove there is another reason you're having these hot flashes and these sluggish bowel movements and the sluggish liver function, elevated cholesterol and brain fog and depression, because you're not having T3 banging on these cells adequately to speed up the production of ATP. So these folks also don't heal cuts well. They slow down every single process in their body. And sometimes you'll get a pulse on them, and there'll be 42 beats per minute.
Oh, that's very low.
Do you work out all the time? Are you hanging out with Lance Armstrong? You know?
Yeah.
And the answer is no. And it's because they don't have enough T3 to set the heart rate in, you know, a 60 level. Now, some older athletes, of course, do have low beats per minute.
Right.
So that's the end game, is everything slows down. And I tell patients and I tell doctors in training and I tell students when we're teaching, every single cell in your body has a receptor, a docking station for T3 thyroid hormone. So if it goes low, if your T3 goes low, everything goes slow.
Makes sense. Total sense.
So you can write your own symptom list.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, hey, I have everything slowed down syndrome.
It's an autoimmune disease if you have a hypo. And just so we're all on the same page, mm-hmm. hypo is low functioning. Mm-hmm. Hyper is high functioning.
You bet.
So we're talking about the low functioning.
Qualify that. There are other causes of low thyroid, but now we're going to get into what causes about 90% of all hypothyroid, and that is an autoimmune attack on the thyroid.
So autoimmune diseases that we're familiar with are things like, the first thing that comes to me is lupus is an autoimmune.
You bet.
Is this in the same category, Hashimoto's thyroiditis, in the same category?
It is, and I call Hashimoto's autoimmune light, and I call it autoimmune light for one reason. Autoimmune disease is a self-attack by your immune system on a tissue.
Okay.
And the one thing that's different about Hashimoto's thyroid is you have replacement for the destroyed tissue in the form of synthroid, in the form of levothyroxine, in the form of triiodothyronine, cytomel, bioidentical thyroid, desiccated thyroid, Armour, Nature Thyroid, West Thyroid,
etc. And we're talking about medications
we're talking about
help you out.
Yes, whether it's porcine or pig-derived desiccated thyroid or a synthetic imitator, if that autoimmune process is destroying that thyroid, at least we have replacement.
Gotcha.
We don't have spinal cord thyroid for an MS patient, right? We don't have joint thyroid for an RA patient.
Rheumatoid arthritis, right?
So it's absolutely in the same genre of autoimmune diseases in the same process. And we should break that down real quick, because the first thing that happened to me as a doctor is I said, oh my gosh, only 10% of low thyroid is severe iodine deficiency. And this is rare in America because we do have supplemental iodine all over our food supply.
Exactly.
And we'll talk about how iodine excess can actually trigger Hashimoto's. So it gets weird real quick. But I'll never forget sitting there saying, oh, but most of low thyroid is because our own immune system is attacking and destroying the thyroid tissue so that it can't function. Then I remember laying in bed one night and being like, Hashimoto's thyroiditis is not a diagnosis. It's still what is happening. It is not why it is happening. So if I say, hey, you have Hashimoto's, we're not done.
Right.
We have to now
understand.
That's right. And that's most of the reason I wanted to get on the radio and talk Hashis is, now why did it do that? And that's all about something called immune tolerance. And if you've been to our clinic, we've probably talked at some point about immune tolerance if you're an autoimmune patient. And immune tolerance is our immune system's ability to tolerate anything. So in an ideal world, even though Monsanto's been messing with it, we found fossil fuel and we make million-dollar tractors and we mow grains and overeat this stuff. I always joke that Chief Niwot and the Arapaho right. in the Boulder Valley were not slugging down quinoa gluten-free pancakes,
right?
This whole grain thing is a figment of our modern industrialized revolution imagination where we can mow these things. Let's say that gluten comes into our body. In an ideal world, our gut immune system samples it and says, oh, you're just a food source. Move on. Pull the carbs out of it. Pull some vitamins out of it.
Take what we need. The rest.
Leave the fiber. Make a poop. Call it good. Right?
Okay. Right.
And you can lose tolerance to anything. So even in an ideal world, if I had mercury put in my mouth from a dental amalgam, my body says, well, that's a toxin, but I'm not going to attack it. And then most importantly, I should surveil and look at my self tissue and say, definitely don't attack. And that's what we call, again, immune tolerance.
Uh-huh.
So in an ideal world, if I see the swine flu, I put an antibody on it. That's our central intelligence agency. It says the infection is right here. Then my Navy SEALs, my cytotoxic T cells, and my natural killers can come and destroy it. Right?
Yep.
They have night vision goggles, kung fu assassination skills. They got the memo, swine flu in Sector 9, boom, and we can kill cleanly. Immunology is sweet because it seems so overwhelming at first, but those who studied and did the hard work to come up with the terminology, it all makes sense. These T suppressor cells, what do then? They say, hey, don't pillage that village, back to base. They suppress our immune system after the war on that virus happened. So it's identify it, put a tag on it, destroy it, and then go back to base. That's what a good, organized, functional immune system does. When we lose tolerance, we look at that thyroid, for example, and we say, huh, that looks a little bit like the swine flu. I'm going to mark it for destruction. Bang. And the second you put an antibody on that thyroid in a more permanent way, now you're in autoimmunity.
Gotcha.
Now you're in the land of lost tolerance. You no longer tolerate or see your own tissue as self safe, you see it as foe, foreign, dangerous.
Yep.
Okay. We were talking about this commercially. We don't have antibodies available for everything, but you can do it to everything. You can have earlobe antibodies.
You know? Theoretically, you can.
You can. And just to, you know, throw a curveball a little bit, you'll have cases of infertility where there's autoimmune attack on ovaries. You'll have cases of infertility where a man is attacking his own sperm. Obviously, connective tissue diseases like lupus and mixed connective tissue disease and dermatographitis and autoimmunity against the heart, any tissue. And then things like PANS and PANDAS, where you start attacking strep and then parts of the brain look so much like strep, you cross-react and drive an autoimmune attack on the brain.
Because it thinks it's
Because it thinks it's dangerous, and that's some cases of OCD, some cases of autism, some cases of severe anxiety, autoimmune attack on parts of the brain. So back to the thyroid, you have Hashimoto's thyroiditis, secondary to loss of immune tolerance to the thyroid. Now, why did we lose tolerance in our immune system? Some things we know is that gluten antibodies and thyroid tissue and Hashimoto's autoimmune thyroiditis are in bed together. Reviewing for our show tonight, and gosh darn it, there's about 8 solid studies on celiac and gliadin antibodies and the higher, dramatically, statistically significant higher incidence of Hashimoto's. And if you read Dottese's book, Karazian's book, I think he waits until page 18 to say, get the hell off gluten if you have Hashimoto's. And it goes both ways. Hashimoto's people have more celiac. And there's celiac, which is eating gluten, triggering an autoimmune destruction of the intestinal lining. And then there's non-celiac gluten sensitivity, where you're still making antibodies to gluten, potentially driving autoimmune diseases in other parts of the body. The punchline is, if you have Hashi's, if you've been diagnosed with Hashi's, if you have Hashi's antibodies on lab but you don't have symptoms yet, get the heck off gluten. Okay, that is a driver of Hashimoto's. So we tell patients every day, genetics load the gun, environment pulls the trigger. So there's your genotype and your phenotype. Genotype is mom and dad gave me these genes. If you're adopted, your biological parents gave you those genes. And then the environment influences the expression of those genes, which is the phenotype. And this is the conversation of epigenetics, which a lot of people are starting to read online about and get excited about, things we've been fired up about for the last 10 years. So you could have this gene for Hashimoto's, and you're all fine and dandy until you start eating waffles. Then you start expressing the autoimmunity on the thyroid. Youngest Hashi's I've seen so far is a 7-year-old girl.
Seems to me that would be a lot of genetic, heavy genetics.
Heavy genetics meets crappy American
food,
diet and lifestyle and environment, you know, including screen times, poor bedtimes, food, lack of exercise, stress, a lot of pressure on these kids too.
Did she have swollen glands or a swollen thyroid?
Yeah, that's a very good question. She did not. And we will see the swollen gland when it's thyroiditis, which means it's in an active destruction of that gland to the point of swelling the gland and being palpable.
Right.
Yep.
But that, I'm hearing you say that that's not
you don't have to have
always
a swollen
the case
thyroid.
At all.
Yeah, you bet. And that's a good point in that we also expect, per the textbooks and what we learned in conventional medical school from my MD buddies and myself in naturopathic medical school, that these people should be overweight and struggling with weight. The predominance of Hashimoto's thyroiditis people I see are thin.
Wow.
I tell people all the time their best doctor is their hairdresser. They're that often says, something's not right with your hair. And a woman comes in and says, you know, my hair has been falling out and my hairdresser basically called me on it. I've been seeing these chunks of hair, and that's one of the major causes of hair loss is autoimmune attack on the thyroid. Basically, in the body's infinite wisdom, hair and nails and skin, I hate to tell you this, but they're all secondary.
We're like,
I could go into cardiac arrest or lose my liver function right now or lose my hair.
Right. You know? So your body chooses hair.
So your body chooses hair. It also chooses bone. You know, it says I could lose, you know, a vital organ or deplete my bones. You know? So
when you're talking about hair loss, we're not talking about the 100 to 200 strands that we normally shed every
day.
You are talking handfuls.
Yeah. And I would say even without the hairdresser, the number one symptom that brings into Hashimoto's case is hair loss. And it's just something where you can blame your fatigue on the kids are driving me crazy, or I stayed up all night to finish a paper, or there's a crunch line at work, or I overtrained Boulder style.
Right, you always have a reason.
Yeah, you always have a reason. And then like the hair starts falling out dramatically in the shower, and you're like, something's not right.
Yeah,
I'm not a doctor, but something is not right.
So you mentioned some symptoms earlier in the show, constipation, increased cholesterol, brain fog. Now we have hair loss.
Mm-hmm.
You said not necessarily weight gain.
Yeah.
But could it be weight gain?
You bet.
Unexplained weight gain and tough to lose it?
You bet. Another cause, we talked about gluten driving loss of immune tolerance on the thyroid, meaning a trigger that can make your own immune system think your thyroid is foreign, dangerous looking and in need of an antibody tag, identifying it as something that should be destroyed. I mean, the autoimmunity is kind of rough. Estrogen surges. You see estrogen surges in polycystic ovarian syndrome,
right,
and insulin surges as well. Those Hashimoto-style women will come in often with weight loss resistance. They're having issues with weight. Again, small percentage in my practice. The predominance of them do not have weight loss issues, and if they are weight gain issues, and if they do, it's 5 pounds, 10 pounds. It's not, wow, I'm stuck and have 50 pounds to lose. But that could be the polycystic ovarian syndrome, insulin resistance, blood sugar, major blood sugar dysregulation, estrogen surging.
What's the most common symptom that you see with your patients who come?
Brain fog, fatigue, constipation all day long, hair loss.
Okay, when you very first walked in the studio, you said to me, oh, you got the Hashimoto's puffy. What did you mean by that?
Well, if you want to tell the world,
Dr.
intimate conversations.
I'm like everybody else out here. Whatever we talk about, I'm sure I have.
Well, this is fun because the other person who has that is Oprah. Huh. So fun little side story. And this is a story I heard. Oz diagnosed Oprah with hypothyroid. And we all saw that. Dr. Oz diagnosed Oprah with hypothyroid. Supposedly, a friend of Datis's got his book into Oprah's hairdresser LA hands.
Wow.
So Oprah has hairdressers all over, as you can imagine. And that book supposedly made it to Dr. Oz. Now, that's the part that is a fun little gossip story. But what is true is 2 months later, and this was shortly after Datis's book came out, Oz came out and said, not only does Oprah have hypothyroid, but she has a specific form of hypothyroid called Hashimoto's. The reason for that book, Datis is an expert in autoimmunity, and the predominant autoimmune disease in America right now is Hashimoto's. There's no more cases of any other autoimmunity aside from Hashimoto's, and that's what we're talking about.
So is the puffy face that Oprah has, and apparently I do too.
And it's funny, you know, I always compliment you on, you look awesome, and everyone who looks extra awesome for their age, you have to say, dang. What are they doing? And I have to tell you, there's a positive side to the Hashi's kind of puff.
It puffs out the wrinkles.
It really does. And you said it, not me, but it's true. And you can see that in Oprah a little bit. But what you're having there is called myxedemia. And that's basically the inflammation from the autoimmunity is going to put a little bit of edema in the tissue layer. So if we were working with you or we were working with Oprah, I don't even need to do gluten testing to tell someone who's Hashimoto's positive, get off the gluten.
Right.
That one drives the heck out of it. Next thing we're going to say is balance your blood sugar. You really want to figure out your relationship with those refined carbohydrates. Remember, I hate to say it, but alcohol is just fermented sugar. Refined carbohydrates are usually grains removed from their fiber and then the sugar. So you really want to get your sugar straight. The other place this happens is pregnancy.
Yeah.
I don't want to de-romanticize pregnancy, especially with my two lovely guys and my wife being so incredible bringing her kids into this world. But the whole job of a woman's body while she's pregnant is to say, don't attack that alien in your uterus.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And her immune system, back to that word, is trying to tolerate that foreign body, the growing baby in the uterus. And there is a massive hormonal cascade, including pro-pregnancy hormone or progesterone, progesterone, helping dampen immune responses so that child
the body
can grow
doesn't attack
and doesn't attack
it.
Yeah. So what you'll see is pregnancy can be another trigger for Hashimoto's because your neuroendocrine immune system is going on this roller coaster ride during pregnancy. However, and this is a very important point, to really, in the conventional medical model, diagnose a woman Hashimoto's, if she shows up thyroid peroxidase antibodies and antithyroglobulin antibodies, which we'll go into, only after pregnancy, those have to hang around a year after pregnancy. So if you pulled antibodies on her before she got pregnant and they're positive, that's Hashimoto's. But if you pull them after and she never had positive antibodies before, that might be her neuroendocrine immune system going on this wild, wacky ride that will normalize 6 to 12 months after pregnancy. Now, we'll still, if we see those and they're high, we'll still do all the things we do to try and comb and pet the immune system back to normalcy, reorganization post-pregnancy. But pregnancy is a big deal. Basically, the way to think about it is any big change in estrogen.
Like menopause?
Menarche, menopause, going on the pill. So I tell people there's a couple natural ones and there's a couple of medicated ones. So there's your get your period. There's, oh, I have acne or I don't want to get pregnant or I have cramps. Boosh, you're going to get slapped on birth control.
Right.
It's crazy how quickly they do that before working with physiology. The next one's going to be getting pregnant. It's a normal experience, but boy, is that a hormonal surge up, down, all around, an immune system bender in regards to don't do Hashimoto's, don't do Hashimoto's, don't do Hashimoto's. And that's why our conscious conception is 3 grams of EPA DHA fish oil, vitamin D high dosing, vitamin K2 if you're not factor 5 or prothrombin mutation, and obviously a prenatal multi, because all of those things help stabilize the immune system during pregnancy.
And they have a lot of anti-inflammatory properties,
they have,
which
well,
is
that's,
the whole
that's
shebang,
immune
right?
organization.
That's
right.
Yeah.
Anytime you're doing anti-inflammatory, you're usually doing immune organization at the same time in the natural world. It's a little less so with things like Advil, even though Advil's not the devil, and if it didn't wreck your vital organs long term,
it'd be good stuff.
We'd use a lot more of it, really. Yeah, there's studies on Advil decreasing Parkinson's incidence. And again, it's an anti-inflammatory, but it comes with consequence. So you don't get that with fish oil. You don't get that with vitamin D. So you have to watch for those hormonal changes, and then menopause, of course. So I'm pretty pro bioidentical replacement if a woman has a hard menopause. And Dale Bredesen, whose book is coming out on arresting Alzheimer's, one of his types of Alzheimer's is severe sex steroid dropout from menopause or andropause, kicking in dementia. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating work he's doing. Most of the stuff he's doing we already do in our clinic, but he's proving it, and that's really, really cool. So you got to watch those estrogen surges. There's one really good peer-reviewed journal article on removal of mercury dental amalgams and Hashimoto's antibodies going away.
Fascinating.
So that is truly where, and I think heavy metals are overplayed in the holistic and natural world, but this is a solid study that says maybe getting your amalgams out is important for reorganizing that immune system. And then the iodine excess, we talk about holistic practitioners come in with their bell bottoms on and they're giving everyone iodine in major amounts. Now we blood test serum iodine, and there are some people who are low iodine, and modest iodine supplementation sometimes is necessary. But we have clinical trials from Sri Lanka, from China, from Iran, from Turkey, from Greece, from Sao Paulo, Brazil, from New Zealand, that all showed when we went and tried to help goiter-laden iodine-deficient populations, good thing, gave them iodine. The iodine-deficiency goiter stopped growing. Came back and retested their thyroid antibodies, dramatic increase in Hashimoto's thyroiditis. So iodine excess is a trigger for Hashimoto's. And there's one clinical trial that shows iodine depletion calmed antibodies on lab. So we overplay this iodine thing a little bit. And then the other one is vitamin D receptor polymorphisms. So some people's vitamin D receptors don't work as well, and they need more vitamin D to calm the autoimmune potential of their genetics and their body. So we like riding that vitamin D between 60 to 100 on
blood
on
test,
every
your serum,
patient.
Blood
yep,
level.
Blood
right.
level, you bet. And the normal range is 30 to 100. But remember, the indigenous who had none of these diseases had 10 times the fat-soluble vitamins we did. So the A, the D, the E, the K2, all 10 times higher. Rare autoimmunity, no heart disease, no osteopenia, osteoporosis, no type 2 diabetes. And we want to emulate that model. I tell people all the time, if you're not working at Red Wagon Farm, and you're outside all the time, and you're like me, living in your box, taking your four-wheel box to your other box, you're going to need some supplemental D. The last two are gut infection. Good gut biome and a healthy probiotics also help stabilize immune tolerance and help you prevent getting Hashimoto. So you could have the genes, get a really bad traveler's diarrhea, not get back on track, and trigger your autoimmunity.
Gotcha.
You could have the genes, you could take antibiotics to not die from strep, good thing, but then not repopulate your good flora, and now dysregulate your immune system from your lack of good gut bacteria, which are profound at regulating immune system. You know, Father Kneipp used to say, treat the gut, treat the gut, treat the gut. And he was right.
Yeah.
And then the final one, which we have on your radio and on our drdorninger.com resources you can go listen to, is biotoxin illness.
Yeah.
You know, those water-damaged buildings and the wrong HLA and the wrong immune response genes can really pop open immune confusion. So when we think about Hashis and we think about how do we work up a case if they're there, it's just like every other autoimmune case we take on. I have to figure out everything that is driving inflammation and immune confusion and then add everything that reestablishes immune normalcy. And again, you know, glutathione levels, good gut biome, ADK2 levels, blood sugar stabilization can't be hypoxic. You know, we have to take care of these infections, whether they be dental or gut infection, et cetera, et cetera. You got to address them all on, and then the immune system has the chance to normalize. And we say normalize, not cure. Because once that gene turns on for Hashimoto's, it's always going to be on. Uh-huh. Now, we can see them sometimes normalize antibodies on lab, and they'll feel great. But as soon as they go back to doing the things that trigger that gene in the first place, they'll just ramp up Hashimoto's again. A lot of patients are having very frustrating experiences in healthcare. So what we try and do is a deeper diagnostic evaluation and really figure out the why rather than what you have. Again, you have hypothyroid. It's due to an autoimmune attack on the thyroid. Well, why do you have the autoimmune attack? We know there's genetic predisposition, but which of those factors we've been talking about, three of them, seven of them, ones that we don't even know yet, are driving this immune confusion? And
so you keep mentioning testing.
Mm-hmm.
I'll use myself as an example. I don't know if I have this disease or not, but I have puffy cheeks. I have cold feet, trouble getting warm. That's another.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for bringing up temperature.
Symptom,
absolutely.
Right? I don't have the hair thing, but I do have. I also have weight gain, but still.
Now you're getting silly.
I know. I'll throw weight gain in anywhere. So should I run out and get a test? If so, what test?
You should run out and get a test. So.
Is it a blood test? I mean, what kind of test do people get?
We can use Datis's title, Why Do I Still Have Thyroid Symptoms
exactly.
When My Lab Tests Are Normal, are a good way to explain it. Why did he make that the title of the book?
Right.
And the main reason is most folks are getting a TSH from their primary care.
Right. That's like
historically.
Standard.
That's standard. It's getting a little bit better. But as I grew up and I'm still growing up as a doctor, that's what we've seen predominantly. That's what we saw on the 9 News Health Fair labs that we see from the primary care doc. That is just the messenger from the pituitary gland to signal your thyroid to produce thyroid hormone. So you can have a normal TSH and be total wackadoo on your T4, T3 production. You could actually have normal TSH and normal T4 output, but you don't convert T4 to T3 adequately. Your deiodinase is not working. Just cleaning up the gut alone increases conversion of T4 to T3. Just cleaning up liver function alone will increase T4 to T3. And you'll see this when you use some liver herbs. You'll upregulate T4 to T3 production. And then most importantly for that book, and I love that book because it has 24 patterns of hypothyroid in the back, and it's really fun to go through those, and we do evaluate all those on every new patient. But they don't run autoantibodies. And basically, the thyroid takes iodine with tyrosine and through the enzyme thyroid peroxidase turns it into T4 and T3. So one of the antibodies you want to look at is, are you attacking that enzyme that makes your thyroid hormone? And for those listening, it's thyroid peroxidase antibodies, which are also called TPO antibodies. About 80% of all of our Hashi's cases, 80 to 90% in my clinic, will show TPO antibodies. So a lot of doctors just stop there. But some of our Hashi's cases don't attack the TPO. They don't attack the enzyme. They attack the globulin, which means protein, or the meat of the thyroid. And those are TG antibodies or thyroglobulin antibodies. So I tell colleagues all the time, just please run both. And when we first started doing in-depth lab testing, even if someone didn't have insurance for labs, it was $242 for the two of those. We bargained with LabCorp to get them down to $22.
Wow.
And then passed the savings on to the patient.
Right.
This isn't extraordinarily expensive to help figure out why someone's thyroid isn't working.
And that could be the reason for a whole lot of things that's going on with them.
That's right.
If we go in and get a blood test, standard mm-hmm. that you don't have to ask for, they always do TSH, mm-hmm. the thyroid stimulating hormone.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have to specifically ask for the T3, T4, and then the two antibody tests, the APO and the TG? Do you have to ask specifically for those extra ones?
Yep, and TPO and TG.
Okay, you have to ask specifically.
You do. So if we were
can they take it out of the same blood sample?
You can. So okay. If you were on a budget and you wanted to do the best bang for your buck and how to get the full picture, TSH, T4 free, which means that's my T4 levels unbound to thyroid binding globulin, which again is the taxicab that mm-hmm. carries thyroid hormones around the bloodstream. T3 free, again, unbound. Mm-hmm. If you saw total T3 or total T4 on a lab test, that would be your T3 bound to the taxicab. And that's how most of your thyroid hormone is around. But the one that affects the cell is the T3 free unbound. So you'd get TSH, T4 free, T3 free. TPO antibodies, which stands for thyroid peroxidase antibodies, again, the enzyme that makes thyroid hormone in the thyroid, and then the meat of the thyroid itself, thyroglobulin antibodies.
TG.
So those five.
Anybody, any blood lab can do that?
Yeah, I think cash pay for those is under $50 at our clinic.
Wow, that's
way
worth it.
Oh, people come in and say, I got those for $99. It's a great deal.
Yep.
We bargained even harder. We really try and grind down cash pay prices just in case something with insurance doesn't work, but also there's a price point that you're trying to work within to get to the finish line. And if you can save $8 on this test, it allows you to order another test to evaluate another system.
Right, exactly.
And that's the problem with, not to pick on Kaiser, but what we've seen over there is they'll order vitamin D today, they'll order TSH in 6 months, then they'll order TPO, antithyroglobulin, T4 free, T3 free by the patient's begrudging, moaning and screaming and kicking 3 months later. And you're just not getting the full picture of how that immune system is working with the brain and the endocrine system.
Do you have a success story?
I'll tell my first Hashimoto story. That's funny.
I'd love to hear your first Hashimoto story.
There are so many Hashimoto success stories in our clinic. Oh. And again, I really thank Dr. Dirk Powell for waking up my endocrinology game. And then I have to say Datis Karazian for really polishing the thyroid game. And then Dr. Shoemaker's interesting with the water damage building, because that's a novel mm-hmm. way to confuse that immune system that we were missing years ago.
And that was our talk on biotoxins, mold, that kind of stuff.
Pre-Boulder flood, I was missing it and missing it big.
Well, you thought you were living in a semi-arid?
I lovingly call him Yellow Man in my head. This very sweet first patient of mine who I for sure diagnosed Hashimoto's. There was plenty of Hashi's cases floating around my clinic. And he walks into my clinic and is like, Eric, I just don't feel well. He's got yellow palms, yellow eyes. And I'm just like, this guy, from my EMT training and just being a human being, all I know is this guy's really sick.
Yeah. Yellow is not a good color.
Long story short, I run basic panel on him, metabolic panel, looking at major organ functions. His liver enzymes are quite elevated in the hundreds, not the thousands, but in the hundreds. His bilirubin's up, so his bile isn't flowing, and he's having backup. He's having bilirubin staining his skin and his sclera.
So is that what the yellow was from?
That's what the yellow was from. But why? So I said, I'm going to start doing these Hashimoto's antibodies. So his thyroid is quite low. His TSH is through the roof. So on average, and again, there's many patterns, but the thyroid stimulating hormone will go up in a hypothyroid because it's screaming at the thyroid, make more thyroid hormone, but the thyroid's not able to produce it. So the thermostat just keeps screaming at the radiator. So average thyroid peroxidase antibody should be 0 to 40. And that's because it's normal for your immune system to sample mm-hmm. your thyroid and say, is everything cool there? But it shouldn't go bang, big attack. His was 846.
Oh, my goodness.
This is, to this day, top 10 thyroid peroxidase antibodies I've ever seen. So he had such a raging autoimmune attack on his thyroid. It destroyed his thyroid output so much that he couldn't set the pace of liver phase 1, phase 2 detoxification and moving of bile into the intestines. So he's starting to have bilirubin backup from a autoimmune attack on the thyroid and having such a dysfunctional pace of how, and that's what he looked like. I'll never forget. It was a poor man had like a tortoise archetype to him. It was just so slow. And he already has a southern drawl.
Uh-huh.
So it was like...
So it was even slower.
Slower. It's one of those cases, and again, we get our butts kicked all week, who says, hey, you saved my life. I'm like, no, you saved your life. You know, doctor doesn't mean to heal. It means to teach how to heal. And he did everything we talked about tonight to the letter. He pulled actually all grains out. He really balanced his blood sugar. We got him on some thyroid support. We got him on some liver support because his liver took such a kicking from that experience.
Uh-huh.
I still see him once in a while today. And again, we still check thyroid levels. One important concept to maybe close out on is, remember, when you get an autoimmune attack on your thyroid and you have Hashimoto's, it is a mix of hyper and hypo symptoms. So it's not just I'm constipated and my feet are cold, and you can get surges of hot flashes and anxiety and agitation and almost a hypomanic experience that will be followed by a severe fatigue.
Wow.
And depression. And that's because this thyroid isn't sitting there just static.
Yeah.
You just ate some gluten and whoop, wound up your immune response, and now you're kicking your thyroid even harder with destruction, and you'll go into more hyper symptoms. Anxious and irritated and agitated. We've had Hashimoto's cases get diagnosed bipolar. And I said, yeah, you were bipolar, but it was secondary to Hashimoto's,
yeah,
which is secondary to loss of immune tolerance.
So that's what they were thinking those big swings were.
That's right. And technically, if you read the definition of what bipolar is, that's what the patient was presenting as.
Yeah.
But remember, all of these things are a constellation of symptoms. They're not a diagnosis. A diagnosis is why it's going on. So for that gentleman, fortunately, we were able to really get to the root causes. And for him, gluten, oats, and dairy were the most intensive immune windups for him.
Back to the dairy and back to the gluten.
Yeah. And again, it's not that no one can have those food sources, but if you're Hashimoto's, they're out.
Dr. Dordinger, it has been such a pleasure and fascinating, as always, to have you on. Do you have a takeaway that you'd like our listeners to have from this show?
I would say if you're not feeling well and you notice you're irritable and agitated and fatigued and you can't make sense of it, go get a serious, thorough diagnostic evaluation. You see marriages get stressed with this stuff. You see people get isolated. You see professional performance go down. You see withdrawn parents. Sometimes it could just be low T3 due to an autoimmune destruction on your thyroid. And I used to tell that to the psychology students I would teach. Make sure if someone's not progressing in your counseling, you suggest they get a medical evaluation. They could be sitting there anemic without enough oxygen to their brain to integrate what you're trying to share about a better perspective on how to live their life. They could have Hashimoto's and have their entire brain derailed from healthy, vital, vigorous living.
And it doesn't sound like there's any real age restriction on this either.
There is no gosh darn age restriction. Yeah. Now, again, with the estrogen surges being such a big part of this, we see it about 24 female to male, and autoimmunity is about 3-1. So now add this to your list with lupus and anemia and low progesterone to if your hair is falling out. And you're a woman and you just had your period for the first time, or you just got on birth control, or you're pregnant, or you're going through perimenopause, you know, this needs to be on your list of things to evaluate and demand it from your doctor. Say, I want you to work for me.